Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I do interviews with real entrepreneurs for an audience of real entrepreneurs who are often building their businesses as they're listening to this interview. Not this interview, as they're listening to these interviews. So I was supposed to do this interview a while back with Molly Feening. She is the founder of Babyators, which creates durable sunglasses for babies and children. And I remember sitting here in this chair going, I think my first question should be, are kids even wearing sunglasses? What babies are wearing sunglasses? And then for some reason, the interview didn't happen. I'm guessing, Molly, that you've heard people say that before. And this interview didn't happen. And I remember that weekend walking through Noe Valley here in San Francisco. That's where I live. It's the one of two places in San Francisco where they're actual kids. I started seeing these babies with sunglasses at the farmer's market and kids wearing sunglasses. And I had no idea this was a thing. Once you have your attention's drawn to it, you notice it, Molly. All right. So I invited Molly here to figure out how big of a business this is, how she built it up, what she did with skeptics like me who didn't believe the kids were wearing sunglasses or ever would, and then how she built up this business. If you're in a business of creating physical products, you're going to want to listen to this. And if you're creating something that's different, that you can expect a lot of skepticism about, this is the right interview for you. And this interview is sponsored by two phenomenal companies. The first I rent office space from them. It's called Regis. I love them. I'll tell you a story about what happened with them later on. And the second is the company you can turn to if you're raising money for your business. Crowdfunding is brand new. So Regis for offices and crowdfunding, Start Engine. I'll tell you more about those later. Molly, welcome. I saw you smile as I told that description.
Yes. Thank you, Andrew. Happy to be here. I think it reminded me of, we had, you know, my husband and I, and actually our two co-founders, Carolyn and Matthew Gard, all went to college together. And when we started the business and said we were making sunglasses for babies, so many of our friends were like, what? That's crazy. Why would you ever do that? And a year or two in, when we, you know, were generating, you know, at that point, I think maybe a million and a half in revenue, and Sarah Jessica Parker's kids are wearing them, Mariah Carey's kids are wearing them, all our, those same friends would say, of course, I always knew that would be such a good idea. So we have firsthand experience with that, both the skepticism and the conversion.
That's a fast ramp up. What's your revenue now, 2017?
2017, we just finished our fiscal year.
2017 was last year, obviously.
Yeah. We do a fiscal year July 1, so we just wrapped up our 2017-2018 year, about $5 million in revenue. We've been around 8 years and have sold 2 million, probably 2.2 million pairs at this point around the world and in about 45 countries. So it's amazing, both the quick ramp up, but also just sort of continued linear growth has been wonderful. And the ramp up quickly, I remember we whatever equity we each put in as a couple to start had recouped that in about 30 days of sales. Wow.
Molly, why sunglasses for kids? My goal here is to understand how you built up the business, but I've got to answer that one question that you brought up earlier. Why do babies need sunglasses?
Totally. I mean, so when we started the business, you know, actually the first thing that we came up with was the brand name. My husband is a fighter pilot for the Marine Corps, and we actually, there's a tradition where when the pilots go on deployments, they fly back in and the families are allowed to kind of hang out on the hangar and wait till the jets taxi over, and then they park and turn off and pop the HUD, and they get out of the plane, and the kids run up to them, and the fiancés and wives and you know, husbands run up to them, and it's such a sweet moment. And I was there one day at one of those post-deployment trips or visits, and it was a really sunny day, and all the kids were squinting and looking for their dads and moms in the planes, and the adults all had our shades on. So I mentioned that to Ted, and he's like, well, we should totally make them and call them Babyators for Baby Aviator. And he and I laughed and loved the name. But then we actually took some time to figure out if there was a need in the market. And since then, we've actually, you know, through that research, both from a consumer perspective, but also from a safety and health perspective, we learned that children's retina are actually even more susceptible than to UV damage than adult retina, because a retina doesn't fully form until about 18. So any any UV you receive as an adult through your eyes in the sunny day, children are getting actually far more of that same damage through just the same exact conditions because of just the way that the eye grows as you age.
Okay.
Or fully forms as you age. So, one example I think about, as we've expanded, we've also expanded globally and we've had great distribution partners abroad. In Australia was one of the first countries that approached us because that's actually where the hole over the ozone, is based there. So they get incredible, intense UV rays and they are hyper mindful about protecting children's eyes in the same way that here in the U.S., I think we do a good job thinking about skin, sun protective wear, SPF, when you're out there with your children, slathering them up, but leaving their eyes, susceptible. Yeah. So whether it's a hat or UV shades or a shade over the stroller, there is something, just the importance of being mindful of kids' eyes is something I've learned.
Okay. So I get the thought process behind it. And I like the story about the validation. Let's get into how you got started. You're someone who early in your career, you had an internship at DoubleClick and
what do you
laugh about that? Tell me about it.
I loved it. It was insane. It was the height of the internet ad bubble when everything was about like cost per click of banner ads,
Wait, they did cost per click back then? It wasn't like CPM, cost per impression?
It was totally cost per click, if I recall. Granted, I was, a freshman in college. It was my first job, my first internship after freshman year. And I was an engineering and CS major at Harvard. I wanted to do something in that sort of exciting tech boom time. And the job was on literally in that building, the internet, I think they call it Silicon Alley here in Manhattan. Yeah. Right by the, I'm blanking on the building, but there's one that's shaped like a triangle. And it's at the foot of Broadway, where Broadway meets Fifth Avenue or that, it was such an exciting time and so much energy, sort of the height of what I felt that internet ads to be. And so it was a fun time and really free for all, this is how I can help. Let me see if I can be useful here and crafting my own role there, because I don't even know if they had ever had interns prior to that.
One of the few fun offices in New York City. They were a startup that was software that could justify their presence in New York because that's where a lot of the ad buys were happening. And they did some fun things like they had an outdoor space where you could play. Mm-hmm. No one in New York ever plays. The thing is that you're describing it as something exciting. And still, when you talked to our producer, you said the assignments, the actual work you got, were kind of mundane. Why was it so mundane that you decided soon after to go get a degree in electrical engineering?
I think I recall the role was more around kind of crafting content. It was a lot of Word documents. It wasn't sort of fun, fun tech. I wasn't doing anything on the tech side, and I get it. I'm there for 8 weeks and, I'm 19 years old. So, but I had same thing experience. My second internship was the following year. I lived in London and worked for NTL, which is the equivalent of AOL here. And same thing, when I arrived, it was sort of here, sit and, move, fold papers and summarize what we're doing in text. And I quickly did what they asked, but then was how about I do this? And actually transitioned my role from that summer into something actually working on mobile content. And actually we were writing in wireless application protocol, programming language. And I learned early on that basically you need to take the initiative and make a job or role or company what you want it to be. If you let somebody else dictate that for you, it's not going to be fulfilling. And I think both of those two experiences taught me that.
All right. You graduated from Harvard with an electrical engineering and computer science degree. You ended up back at Harvard after taking a little job at IBM, back at Harvard in a think tank. And then from there, you were in DC studying how to mobilize groups online, and you were working with the Muslim community in Western Europe to do what?
Yeah. So I was working at the Berkman Center, which took me in a job of the role of internet security, studying the role of internet security and how Islamist extremism was mobilizing online, and moved to DC for a job with a think tank called CSIS, Center for Strategic International Studies. And they were managing an open source intelligence platform. And this was now, this was 2007. So it was just after the Madrid bombings, just after the London bombings, where it was one of the first signs of self-mobilized Islamist extremism in Europe. And I also the CEO Van Gogh assassination, where he was murdered on a bicycle ride through Amsterdam. And historically prior to that, there was the more of the, you know, you'd say September 11th than we're here in Europe, but that model where people are sent to a training program, return with a mission, weapons, money, and it's kind of run by a puppet master kind of to the, you know.
Molly, what I'm getting at is, it seemed like you were not sure what you wanted to do. You were working at DoubleClick. Then you got an electrical engineering degree. Then you were helping the Muslim community in Western Europe. Then you went and you did commercial real estate. Were you trying to find yourself, or are you the kind of trying to find your path, or were you the kind of person who just liked to do all these things? And if you could dedicate a lifetime to each, you would?
The latter. I am definitely a jack of all trades, master of none sort of person. I love wearing lots of hats. And I think, you know, what I've learned through this process with aviators is I love being my own boss. I love being able to take the company in new directions that excite me or interest me, learn about something, and be sort of really get in deep with things that, you know, you might not, you know, would be able to do if you were in a traditional job with a traditional role. And so for me, entrepreneurship is the way to jump around to lots of those interests while still kind of heading towards that common path. And we've been doing Baby Eaters 8 years now, and I've learned that success actually comes from those persevering through lots of those decisions. But
is it hard for you as someone who's had such a mix of work experience in the past to stick with one? Do you find yourself having another idea every year and like getting tempted to move away? You do.
Yeah, totally.
What's the latest idea that tempted you, but you stuck with Baby Eaters?
So we do a couple of different things. We still do commercial real estate, for instance. My husband and I own 4 buildings in Charleston and manage those. I have a number of friends in Charleston who are visual artists, and I'm working with them on starting a art forward children's publishing house called Little Bit Lit. So I actually do lots of different stuff on the side. Baby Eaters is, you know, the most successful and the one that sort of is my day job, pays the bills and has the most sort of forward momentum. But I love kind of always jumping around to different new things and helping other entrepreneurs get things off the ground. You know, I run this women's organization in Charleston where it's a lot of female entrepreneurs come together and just sort of bounce ideas off each other and train each other in different roles. And
you are able to express this need to keep creating, to keep moving from project to project while working at this one business. How do you do that and not become one of those people who's a dilettante, who doesn't give enough attention to the main thing, the thing that's going to allow you to experiment with everything else?
Yeah, I think what I've learned is partnering with the right people, partnering with or hiring people whose skill sets complement yours. For instance, the 4 of us, those 4 co-founders, the other husband and wife are sort of as active in the business as I am. My husband is an active duty Marine, we're now reservist Marine, so he's has been able to do kind of has less time for it. But Matthew, the other husband, is the real sort of numbers, projections, sensitivity analyses, you know, factory relationship, on the phone with China at 2 a.m. in China actually right now, you know, checking our quality control for 2019. And then Carolyn is this amazing, very detail oriented, can sit with a 300-page Macy's EDI manual and go through every single thing and not make an error in our the way we handle our distribution with them.
What's the thing that she's gone through? A 300-page what?
Oh, EDI manual for Macy's. Or, you know, EDI is the back-end system for major accounts. It's how they handle inventory analysis.
Oh, that's how Macy's handles their inventory? And that they want you to study this 300-page manual?
Oh, Macy's, Nordstrom, Dillard's, all of them use EDI.
I had no idea.
And it's basically, it sort of outlines how they handle receiving your inventory, shipping it out through the distribution centers to the individual stores, restocking. They act specific about, you know, what you're putting on the inside of the box, what you're putting on the outside of the box.
You've got this partnership where each of you has their specialty and you're each diving in deep into that, or at least they are, which allows you to do things like this podcast.
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly. Because neither one of them, they're both introverts. So doing something like this podcast or going to trade shows and selling baby eaters, on the floor to the salespeople, it's not their interest or where they get energy. And so for me, I love talking about baby eaters. I love sharing our story. And I'm able to do that because, you know, we've both partnered with the right people. And also, as we build our team, now we've got 7 full-time employees in Atlanta hiring the right people to take the work off your plate that de-energizes you and allows you to do the work that energizes you.
All right. Let me understand, Molly, something. You and your husband, Ted, came up with this idea as you were having a conversation about how wives and kids look at the flight and see their see their loved one up in the air. How did this other couple end up being a part of this?
So we had went to college with them. My husband and Matthew actually sang a cappella at Harvard together. So they were good buds in college, traveling the world, singing for their supper in the summers. And they married and ended up in Atlanta. And we were in Beaufort, South Carolina at a base. And we would actually travel the South together. A lot of our friends at Harvard end up sort of either West Coast, Silicon Valley, LA, or New York, DC, Boston, historically. There's less people from college in the South. So we all banded together.
I get that you guys were traveling together as a family. What made you say, let's reach out to them? Let's see if we can get Carolyn and Matthew to join in on this.
They were both consultants at the time, McKinsey and Bain, and were basically looking to do something different since they were flying to opposite sides of the country and rarely overlapping. So we knew they wanted to do something entrepreneurial. And we also knew, and same back to kind of what I was just saying about complementing skill sets, I remember my husband said to me, if I would ever go into business with a friend, it would be Matthew Garr, because the way his skill sets complement mine, you know? And I remember him thinking that, and we had this list of who would we ever go into business with, and Matthew and Carolyn were at the top, and we had dinner with them and talked about this idea, and they loved the brand name as well. And then their consulting brain said, all right, let's do a market analysis on this. And we actually interviewed 1,000 moms to study what children's sunglasses people liked and what they didn't like and what they liked about them and how we would differentiate baby eaters in the marketplace.
Okay. You know what? Let me take a moment here to talk about my first sponsor and then come back in and we'll figure out how I want to understand how you evaluated this market, because I want to learn how to figure out where opportunities are. And we'll continue from there also about how you got your customers. But my first sponsor is a company that actually fits in perfectly with this, Molly. Here's the deal. You know about crowdfunding in the sense that you say, I've got something to sell. You go online, you sell it, and then you make it. Well, what happens if you need more than just sales? What happens if you need to actually raise money? Well, this company called Start Engine decided that what they were going to do was help entrepreneurs raise money. Same idea as crowdfunding, the same kind of thing you see on Kickstarter and Indiegogo, except they say, you know, instead of selling the widget, sell a piece of your business. Instead of going hat in hand to, actually nobody goes hat in hand anywhere, but instead of going to try to figure out the whole venture capital community, trying to have 1,000 meetings, hoping that one or two of them will say yes, say, you know what? Why don't you just sell a piece of your business online? Do it in the crowdfunding way, in the new modern way. And frankly, if you want to do a crypto ICO, they'll enable you to do that too. They said this should be available. And so they created it. And anyone out there who's trying to raise money owes it to themselves to at least consider this. Here's a URL where Mixergy listeners can go, where they're going to get a bunch more than anyone else who's signing up, as far as I could tell. don't want to make these sweeping generalizations unless I can actually do some research. But from what I can see, they're offering us a lot of free things like expedited onboarding. That's not free. Wait, full creative services. They're going to give us, what are they going to do? You know what? I'm really reluctant to make a mistake in what we're promising because this is about raising money. So I'm going to tell you guys this. If you're looking to raise money for your business, whether it's standard crowdfunding or even try an ICO, here's what you want to do. Go to mixergy.startengine.com. They're going to give you $5,000 in services for free. I'm going to let you go to the website and read the details of it because this is too important a decision for me to just read to you a few lines here and sell you on. Look at it. If it makes sense for you or someone you work with, you're going to love me for having introduced you to it. And if not, you're going to learn a new way that companies are raising money. Go to mixergy.startengine.com, mixergy.startengine.com. All right. You had this idea and you were starting to say that you interviewed how many families?
Yeah, we created a market survey and interviewed, I want to say somewhere between 800 and 1,000 parents about sunglasses that were on the market already.
When you say you interviewed them, you personally would call them up and have conversations with them?
No, excuse me. We surveyed them, not interviewed. Yeah.
Okay, you just find that many parents and you'd send them a survey, I'm guessing like a Google spreadsheet type of form or something?
Like a SurveyMonkey survey.
Okay, and then what kind of questions were you asking and what did you learn?
We asked questions like, you know, what brand sunglasses do you like for your child? Does your child wear sunglasses? What do you like about the sunglasses out on the marketplace? What don't you like about them? Price point you would pay for them. And we actually learned a number of really interesting things that directed how we launched our business. Specifically, one is the two things that parents said they disliked most about sunglasses that were out there in the children's space was number one, that they break. So a lot of the sunglasses at the time were that sort of cheapy plastic where you sort of bend and they, you know, they're hard plastic and they break apart. So we actually sought out the most durable material we could find, which was a rubber instead of a plastic, and made ours out of a BPA-free, lead-paint-free, phthalate-free rubber, and tested them as safe as a chew toy, knowing that they're probably going in kids' mouths because that's what all kids do. And I have a pair here. This is my Princess Pink. So, like, you know, they're basically like...
Look at that. For people who are listening, she just bent it till it was flat.
Twist them into a pretzel, and they return to their natural shape. And the other is that they get lost. So a parent would say, why would I want to spend any money, $20, $10, $100 on a pair of shades that Johnny is going to lose at the playground on Saturday? So we actually, we listened to our consumers and said, wow, if this is the main thing, how can we solve this problem? And when we launched, we created what we call our lost and found guarantee, where we send a free replacement pair for 1 year for every pair sold. So that, you know, in addition to consumers actually really feeling like we cared about them, and I think that really helps them connect to our brand, it also was, you know, this byproduct was that it's a story that people love to tell. And I feel like half of the press we've ever had in the past 8 years we've done this, and we've had some great press, including, you know, Ellen DeGeneres show where she said, and they replaced this pair for free, you know, and it cut to commercial and everyone goes on our site and site crashes. And so, you know, what I learned from that is actually seeking the feedback from potential consumers and then actually acting on it. Don't just ask them, actually fold their feedback into your business. And we've actually continued to do those surveys throughout the business. And that's how we expanded into our older age size called ACEs. And
let me break down what I've learned. I want to actually understand a little more detail about what I learned.
Yeah.
How did you get that many parents, for one thing, to fill out the survey? Where did you get that many parents?
We used a survey company. So, you know, Matthew and Carolyn being consultants, you know, knew how to run a survey with, you know, a big survey entity. And I can...
So you paid to have the survey done. The survey company found the parents. They worked with you to ask questions. It seems like what you were asking is, for parents who had sunglasses or had bought sunglasses, what did they like and what didn't they? Were you also trying to validate that there were some number, a big enough number of parents who never bought sunglasses but could be convinced to buy them? Or were you just saying, who out there is already interested? Let's sell to them.
I think we definitely had the questions in there. Do you wear sunglasses? Do you put sunglasses on your children? Most of the survey at that time was focused on what's out there and how can we differentiate ourselves. Since then, we've learned that it is an actual education campaign teaching the importance of wearing sunglasses. I want to say today the statistic is 1 out of 3 parents still put shades on their children. So it's not the default, and that's part of our growth as a company was learning that and learning how to teach people about the importance of protecting kids' eyes as well.
Okay, and so you were starting to see where did people not what were their biggest pet peeves about sunglasses, and they told mm-hmm. you breaking and losing them, and you said we're going to offer the irresistible or irrational offer. That's something that you mm-hmm. learned in business school, right?
Irrational offer. Exactly. That's what our business, my partner is a business school professor. When we came up with this, he says, that's the irrational offer. We're like, the what? And he told us exactly about that. That something that sounds so ridiculous actually is quite reasonable, or it sounds like in our case, something that would just bankrupt a company, right? How could you give a free pair for every pair you sell? And in the reality is, first of all, a lot less people take advantage of it than you think. And secondly, the numbers work out that, that wouldn't necessarily even happen even if more people do. In fact, we find the people who do take us up on our free pair are some of our strongest brand ambassadors and out there talking about their free pair and talking about baby ears. And so we wish more people would take us up on that offer.
You know what? So I was looking it up and I did see that there are blogs and other places where people talked about it. I think on online reviews, people talked about it. I've got a Hey Mama blog post here about you and the service. And it says, one of the best customer service policies we've ever encountered. You lose them, they'll mm-hmm. replace them. And I did some digging, and it looks like what you do is you'll send a replacement, but they have to pay the shipping charge of $5.95. And my sense is that in that shipping charge is the cost of the new product anyway. Am I right?
Roughly. But we're also it's not completely covered in that, but it is something that if someone has a problem with a shipping charge, we cover it as well. For us, it's about making the customers happy, and if they say, listen, I don't want to pay $5.95, like, we make that work. Being a 7-person team, we actually have one person solely on customer service out of 7, which is a lot for a small business. And so we we've learned that you go the extra mile for the customer to make them feel like you're taking care of them and they really appreciate it and they talk positively about it and use, word of mouth to sort of spread the good juju onward.
Yeah, I'm looking at Amazon, and it looks like on Amazon I can buy them for $20, including free shipping. Mm-hmm. And they also offer free returns, which is always helpful with them. I see. So yeah. The $6 is not going to break you that you're offering it, but it does make a big statement. Big thing that you guys worried about, we're going to actually go out of our way to reassure you that that's not going to be an issue here. All right. What about manufacturing? How did you know mm-hmm. where to go get it manufactured? And what's the horror story from the first manufacturing process? I feel like everyone I've interviewed has a horror story with manufacturing.
We have a couple horror stories. We were laughing. When I was in Atlanta last week with my team, we were laughing at some horror stories. I found, one of the most important lessons I've learned in entrepreneurship or running my own business is take advantage of your personal network. Friends are there to help. Friends want to help. And then you in turn help them when you can. We found our factory through Matthew, one of my partner's business school friends who had a factory, relationship doing another plastic injection molding product with that factory. It was a Taiwanese family owned business. And so we basically emailed a bunch of people and said, does anybody have any contacts in plastic injection molding, and coincidentally found somebody that did. And I've had the same thing. I have a friend who makes suede loafers in Italy, and the way she found it was just email a bunch of her friends, her mother's friends, her father's friends, and get the word out and found a number of factories, and then short conversations with 10, long conversations with 5, you get a sample from 2 or 3 and you pick the one.
All right. When you were trying to figure out how to do this and turn it into a business, you turned to Dave Gilboa, who was your, yeah. What was your connection to him? He's the co-founder of Warby Parker.
That's another great example of just taking advantage of, you know, the people who care about you and want to help, or not taking advantage, that's the wrong way to phrase it, but like, you know, calling on, asking questions, yeah. asking for help, admitting you kind of don't know everything and are, you know, need feedback. Dave Gilboa was one of my husband's college roommates at Harvard, and he launched Warby about a year or 9 months before we launched Baby Eaters. And so Ted calls him up, and obviously even then Warby just was having this amazing trajectory upward and growing like gangbusters. And Ted said, obviously, Dave, this is not the same kind of business. You're doing adult prescription eyewear and disrupting that market. And we're making a children's baby product and trying to create a market in baby shades there. But what have you learned that could be useful? And his first answer was, you know, don't spend any money to start on paid advertising. And this was 8 years ago, so I don't know if he would say the same thing today with, you know, Facebook and Instagram's awesome digital advertising algorithms. But back then, that was not at play. And he said, don't put any of your money into paid ads. Do basically put your marketing budget into a really good PR firm and get that earned media and buzz and press all day long. And he's like, we're very specific at Warby PR team about what we're looking for, and we want print, and we want this business problem with this. And that, you know, was a huge role, according to Dave, in sort of getting buzz from Warby early on, is finding that right PR partner. So we launched Babyators post-recession and really started the company on a shoestring. I want to say we built the site with a designer we had never met in Bogota, Colombia, who didn't speak English, and I sent him a PDF of the website I wanted, and it was $2,000, but we spent, I want to say, $1,500 or $2,000 per month on PR from day one.
That's not much. You said $1,500 on PR?
When we launched, yes. Now it's more than that. But at launch, we basically, you know, we interviewed a number of firms, and we got, you know, a whole range of you know, the gamut of potential monthly retainers, mm-hmm. and went back to the one who we liked the most, who is the person we actually still work with today, Connect out of LA. They're awesome. Sabina, like me, was sort of a female business owner, so growing her business at the time. She had 3 to 5 employees, and now she's got 50 PR women and men working with her. But it was, you know, went back to her and basically said, we can't afford your whatever $4,000 or $5,000 a month. How can we figure out a way to reduce the scope so we can work with you? So I think, you know, you might get a quote to start that, you know, if you go back to them and try to say, listen, the partnership here could be really great, and we'd love to grow into something where we can pay you that. How can we start just to get the ball rolling? Often vendors and freelancers and third party partners are willing to negotiate there a little bit.
You know, she's the one, I'm looking at my notes, she's the one who introduced me to you.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. She's also awesome. Apparently got you guys in Newsweek really fast. Am I right?
So one of our first hits was Newsweek back when it was still print. I think it was the last edition, or, you know, one of the last 2 or 3 print Newsweeks. And within a month or two of launching Baby Eaters, we launched in May, and this was June or July. Newsweek said it was one of the 15 essential products of the summer. And then a few months after that was, you know, our first major celebrity hit, which really kind of was a big boost for us, which is the Mariah Carey feature in Us Weekly.
And that's just her finding you in a store. You know what, right? Let me take it slow for a second. How did you know that this was going to be the right PR agency to get you media, especially if you're not paying more than other people? You're actually paying less than her other clients. How do you know she's going to get you the attention? How did you know that she was going to be able to get you results?
I think part of it was gut instinct. Part of it was, you know, I had 3 or 4 phone calls with business owners of the various PR firms that we were working with. And Sabina was building her business, was hungry. You could feel her energy over the phone, that she was so enthusiastic about Baby Eater. She got our product. I think that's huge. Somebody that really gets your product And now having, 8 years in, I also know that, with her being based in LA, it was incredibly valuable with the sort of Hollywood connections there. So do you need New York editors, or do you need sort of more of the Hollywood thing versus New York City versus LA PR firms? They have different contacts and different relationships. It's wonderful to be able to do a gift to, Justin Timberlake down the road when he's like, I want a pair of aviators, and their team is able to kind of run it over, whomever it is.
And she did that for you? In addition to getting you a press, she also got you celebrities to try it?
Yeah, so part of what Sabina's team does for us is twice a year we do a gifting. And in the beginning it was, what's the biggest celebrity name we can give to? And now since, I've seen the evolution of influence on consumers change, it's not about the big name anymore, because often those are purchased, or those, you question the authenticity of the product, promotion or endorsement. And they've actually evolved more into sort of, I've seen a trend of the power of micro influencers and local bloggers and community bloggers, where they're viewed as sort of friends and real trusted voices. So we actually have evolved from gifting to like the Jessica Biel as a Timberlake example, to more of the local bloggers whose moms trust them, and they wake up and say, what are they talking about? What are they reading about? What are they writing about on a daily basis? And so that's how our gifting has kind of evolved.
Why weren't you worried that Warby Parker would take your idea? They're already in the glasses space. They might recognize that some of their clients have kids. You're smiling as I say that because?
I'm smiling as I say that because they actually just launched Children's like a month ago.
Ah, okay.
It's a different product. It's a different industry. I think back then, I know when 8 years ago he was, they were very focused on their retail bricks and mortar rollout. So, how do we, first start online, and then since then they've opened a number of stores, and then they switched to sunglasses, and now they're doing kids shades. We are known as the baby shades. We were the first in the baby space that wasn't the baby band that had the racquetball headband that looks super uncomfortable on the kids. Yeah. Granted, the kid can't get it off, but it's not stylish and it does not look comfortable on TV. But so we were the first to play in the space with the bright, young, energetic, but still the soft rubber that's safe. They're not super expensive. It's the $20 price point and more accessible to sort of the everyday American. Warby has the a little bit of that sort of Brooklyn hipstery kind of sort of shell.
They could have done the hipster version. I'm sensing what you're saying is you were willing to take that risk, and you thought that this was enough outside of their focus that they wouldn't jump in right now.
Yes, I also just think that I've learned there's enough room for multiple players to play in a space successfully. A rising tide raises all boats. We don't look at our the other people in the sunglasses space as they're taking us away from potential consumers. We actually view it as, how can we reach new consumers that want aviators versus a different brand? Okay. We don't necessarily feel threatened by consumers, by competitors.
Okay. I saw that Newsweek article. It linked or mentioned the website, and that's where the initial sales were happening. But meanwhile, we hadn't talked much about her, but Carolyn was at her dining table doing something that allowed you guys to go beyond that website. Let me take a moment to talk about my second sponsor, and then we'll come back and talk about this. My second sponsor is a company called Regis. I've been talking about how I rent office space from them, but I got to tell you, Molly, something that happened to me yesterday. I didn't have any meetings in the office, so I said, you know what? I'm taking my iPad. I've been enjoying working on my iPad more than on my laptop or computer lately. So I like just being able to manipulate the screen directly instead of through a mouse. And I said, San Francisco is so overcast in the summer, August, September, way too overcast. Let's go to Berkeley, where the sun's always out. So I go to Berkeley. I'm enjoying myself, having watermelon drink, and they do endless refills at this one place that I found. Most people are in their offices the whole day, so I get the place to myself, and I'm sitting there hanging out, enjoying myself. And at some point I said, I'm downloading like 100 megabyte keynote presentation. It's taking forever on their Wi-Fi. I realized at that point, no wonder I'm enjoying this drink. It's full of sugar. It may not be actually literally sugar that they're adding into it, but you know, not many watermelon drinks are sugary. I should just go someplace where, first of all, it's a little bit less hot. I couldn't deal with the heat by 3 p.m., better Wi-Fi, and where I can stay away from these sugary drinks. And I went on Google Maps, because I've been using that more than Yelp lately, and I looked up Regis. And sure enough, 2 blocks away, there was a Regis office. I go to the Regis office. I say, hey, I'm from the San Francisco location. I've got office space there. And I really do. I'm in a four. I've got my own office here. I've got reception that I share and the kitchen that I share and all that. But I got my own space. I said, I'm in the San Francisco office. Can I work out of here? They go, absolutely. I get this long table to work from to myself. Lots of places to plug in that are comfortable. Even though the place looks like it's got a reclaimed wood table, it's actually fake reclaimed wood. So I can plug into the freaking table, which I love. And I get juiced up there. I get my tea that's green tea and not sugary. And frankly, I looked around. They even had a private bathroom with a shower in. And I realized next time I come in here and I checked in with them, can I leave my stuff here, go for a run? They go, absolutely. And then come back and shower and get to work. And one of the things that I love about Regis is I have my own office. I don't have to work from home. I have my own space. I could have meetings here. I could have scotch night here. If I have an issue like mailing a letter, which I hate to do, the receptionist will do it for me. Anyone who rents from Regis gets that. It helps you focus on your work. But the other thing that I don't talk enough about is anywhere in the world that I want, I've got office space. I just go in, I say I'm with Regis, and I could get desk for myself and be comfortable and feel like home. Right. And the Wi-Fi, like that will connect. My phone automatically connects, my laptop, my iPad, the works. All right, if anyone out there is looking to professionalize their business, yes, you can go rent office space. Yes, there are lots of options, but what I love about Regis is they're fully professional. They help you get things done, and they're all over the world. There's a URL you can go to, or do what many people now who are listening to me have done. Contact me and my team. We'll introduce you to our person at Regis. So here's the URL, and then here's my email address if you want to connect with me and my team to have an introduction. Talking way too long about this, Molly, but I could see from the smile on your face, you understand this is passion.
I get it.
Oh, I love
as somebody
Regis.
Who was literally running around and not sitting in my sister's office for the phone call because I couldn't find an office thing. As somebody was running around for the preparing, you know, being in New York City unexpectedly for the hurricane evacuation, my sister thankfully was able to share her office today, but it would have been nice to have access to a New York City region.
And you know what I've done? I've had people who needed office space like you did, who didn't have a sister in New York City. They just said, I need a quiet place to do this interview. My assistant calls up Regis and says, here's a space. And there's always space no matter where they are.
Amazing.
Clear internet to talk. Anyone out there who wants this kind of experience, really, first class experience, like Mad Men they treat you, you know? You get to work on your business. They take care of everything else to the level of detail that people at Mad Men took care of. I forget the character names, but all the head muckety mucks there.
Don Draper.
What is it? Oh, Tim Draper, right.
Don Draper.
Tim Draper is the investor, right. Okay. Regis.com/Mixergy. Regus, as they say in South America, where I've used them, .com/Mixergy, or just email me and my team, contact@Mixergy.com. You don't have to sign up. You will not be able to sign up as far as I know. They'll just take you for a tour. You walk around, you'll get to experience it, you get to work from there. And then if you want to sign up, you can work from them. Regis.com/Mixergy. Molly, I should have, you know what?
I wish
I could invest in them. I freaking love them.
I know, seriously.
Really good. Every time I talk to Sachit, who does our ad sales, I go, and did you sell Regis? He goes, Andrew, I sold a bunch of Top Towel. Top Towel loves us. People are signing up for them. I go, great. Is Regis signing up already? This is their like second experiment with me. Part of the problem for them with me is that they can't decide what they can't tell me what to say. And who knows what I might say? I might just say, hey, it's a private office. You could have sex with your wife in it. They go, no, we have a brand name. Andrew just ruined it. And that's the way they are. They're too to want my
I love it. It's spontaneous.
Yeah. All right. I told you before we did this interview, I don't edit. And that goes for the advertisers too. Much of their frustration sometimes. Okay. Your co-founder, meanwhile, was at a dining room table making phone calls to whom to help expand the way that you sell?
To retail stores. So basically, when we launched, we initially thought it was going to be, you know, all direct to consumer. And after the Newsweek hit, we had a number of children's boutiques, mom and pop, sort of high-end accessories and clothing stores call us and say, can we carry these sunglasses? This sounds great. And we're like, oh, maybe there's a potential here too. And so Carolyn and I started just phone calling from our respective dining rooms. She's in Atlanta, and we were living in New York at that point with the Marines. And I was pregnant with our first son, and we are literally just sort of introducing ourselves over the phone to buyers at high-end children's accessories and apparel stores around the country. And within, I want to say, 6 or 7 months, maybe 9 months, we were in 75 doors. And then we also at that point had met the Nordstrom buyer at a trade show that fall, and Nordstrom expressed interest in signing on as our first major account. And so we were in Nordstrom that following spring.
You met them at the event. What did you do to help stand out from all the other people who are trying to sell to Nordstrom's? What was it about you?
So in terms of sort of trade show strategy, trade show research, we've never done that before. So Ted and I actually went to a show at the Javits as a guest, just bought a guest day pass and like walked the floors. And I don't know if we took pictures, but I don't know if that's legal. Maybe we did or did not. But, you know, took notes of what we would do, what we liked most from the booths we saw that really stood out. And, you know, big sign, bright color, something fun, lots of, you know, in our case, a huge photo of an adorable kid having fun in our shade. And really focus on quality imagery and content, and craft that into whatever, you know, the booths we, you know, bought the smallest and cheapest size trade show booth you could get at what was the, you know, ABC, it's called ABC, is the big show for the kids space. And went there and got our IKEA table, IKEA furniture, and the huge poster of an adorable kid and our logo, and just said hi to people that walked by, and people came over and they liked our product and they saw the, you know, us turn into a pretzel, and they were impressed by that. And they saw the couple press hits that we got and the few celebs that had been wearing them at that point, and took a chance on us. I think that's, you know, really cool about specifically the boutiques and a major like Nordstrom, which is rare. You know, Nordstrom is one of those majors that actually will take a chance on a new brand and loves having companies that no one else has, you know, products that nobody else has. And so they're a really cool innovator in that kind of larger department store space, I think. But in terms of starting with the local shop, local community boutiques that, you know, whether it's adult, you know, products or kids products, they're the ones that have the ability to play with sort of new innovative brands and products.
I like the pretzel. You did the demo a moment ago. I don't even know if you did it intentionally, but I saw as you were picking up the glasses, you instinctively started to bend them and flex them. Yeah. And it was you learning from the beginning, parents are worried that the glasses are going to break. We're going to find a way to not just reassure them that they won't, but show them super that they won't. Like, we're going to go the other way to almost make them feel unbreakable. And that's part of what you did when Nordstrom and other buyers came to see you at your little booth with the IKEA furniture.
So I get that. And today, even 8 years in, one of our best ads on Instagram or Facebook is this adorable kid literally twisting the ad, you know, the shades, in both still and motion video. So it's something. It's you know, one of our differentiators, and finding for any entrepreneurs, how do you differentiate yourself from the competitors in your space, and really kind of tell that brand story authentically and sort of, you know, continue to sort of be true to those differentiating points.
What about when you were making phone calls? What did you do to differentiate yourself from all the other people who are calling when you couldn't do that video demo or the visual demo?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, when we launched, we were the only people in the baby space. So for us, it was initially just about the concept of babies wearing shades. So they were like, well, do they keep them on? Do they fit the baby? You know, and we actually took the initiative to send a sample pair to every buyer, especially if a buyer had a grandchild or a new baby. We would send that free sort of as like a complimentary, here, check it out, try it on babies, prove the concept. If you like it, buy more. If there's a way as an entrepreneur, you can do that, and you can actually let the buyer become the consumer, merchant buyer, you know, of a store, become your consumer and buy into your product, then you have an advocate to, you know, on the inside.
I get that. Even for me, whenever somebody sends me a product, one of my past guests sent me coffee. Now, of course, I got to try it. And even if I'm kind of okay about it, the fact that it's a gift makes me want to buy it more again next time.
Totally.
Still, because
and the fact that the generosity of spirit, you're like, wow, they're nice people. I want to support them.
Yeah. You know what? There's a coffee that I've been drinking over and over and over, Don Pablo. And it's only because when I ran the New York City Marathon the first time and I was anxious and I wasn't fully awake, they offered these little free cups of Don Pablo coffee. Now I'd like Don Pablo. Who even thought?
Don Pablo is like 4 blocks from where I am right now. They have a huge like wall mural on 57th and like 3rd or 2nd Avenue with like a horse and a cowboy hat.
They're like a nothing brand to me. I didn't even know they did that. I just know them as an Amazon brand that happened to have given me free coffee. We're talking about a long, long time ago at New York City Marathon. So I get the value of that. What about follow-up? You seem like someone who'd be really good at following up, at not just saying, thanks and I'll check in, but really having a process for checking in. What is your process for checking in and selling?
My process, I mean, at this point, you know, we've built a great team.
How about when you were starting out? When it was just you?
When it was just us. I mean, it was so much about the personal relationships, for sure. We continued, went to 10 to 12 trade shows then, and we continue a year, and we continue to go to 10 to 12 trade shows a year as a team, because we actually, that in-person connection, to be able to see your buyer and have a cup of coffee with them or have a cocktail with the man of the day and talk and laugh and keep that personal connection up is invaluable. To your point around just feeling like, you know, oh, I have that story and that narrative or relationship with them. You know, as a thinking about, if I were to start today or even back then, is there a way you can tell your story through content that's interesting? And is it a fun postcard? Is it a fun newsletter? Is it content that is, you know, somehow interesting to the consumer versus just you saying, buy my stuff. What are you teaching them? What are you enlightening them about? What are you kind of like something funny, a really beautiful video or photo? And so, you know, when I'm working on sort of telling our brand story today, and I mainly work on sort of the e-com side now and less on our wholesale side, it's how are we crafting beautiful content that connects, you know, to our consumer, connects to the parent, and you know, it's for Babyators, it's really bright, beautiful, colorful, fun, playful video and photo and photography that the kid is obviously having fun, you know, a kid running around a tennis court, a kid running in and out of the waves, a mom laughing with the child, a dad laughing with the child, a family together with the shade. So those are the moments that you connect with.
You personally, Molly, strike me as someone who has good style, not just because you're in a bad location, like you just happen to be in this location and you're coming across right on camera, but also because I happen to be peeking at your house on some article when I was researching you. Wasn't there some magazine that showed the inside of your house?
Yes.
Is it always that organized?
It is. I like spares, or you know, this is an office, but I subscribe to the Scandinavian, like gray floors, white plaster walls, with a pop of color and art, and keep it super clean. And you know, Charleston, actually, where we live in Tucana, is a wonderful creative community. I have a lot of friends that are photographers, videographers, and so making those photos and videos, which we do a couple times a year, is incredibly fun. It's just getting our friends together and, you know, using
you mean all the baby photos that I see on Instagram and on your site, that's you saying, this is a beautiful environment. Let's go find some of these more artistic backgrounds. I'm going to go and you personally are shooting them?
I mean, I'm not the photographer, but I'm sort of the producer director of the day, sort of child wrangler, snack provider.
But you know what? I'm looking at these photos. Is your house always this organized?
It is. I don't like clutter. We a byproduct of being a Marine family, we've moved 8 times in 10 years. Mm. So half of the stuff gets thrown out either by accident or on purpose every time we move. So we're down to bare bones, you know, good feng shui.
I do love that about moving. Stuff. My friends hate moving. I love that I move so much because it forces you to get rid of stuff that you took for granted, but you really didn't need. All right, let's close out with this. Our producer said, look, this sounds a lot like a happy-go-lucky story. There's no way that it's this happy-go-lucky. Talk to us a little bit about the challenges. Here's the one thing that stood out in the conversation that she had with you. Seasonality. You actually use the word whiplash to describe your cash flow. Summer comes, people need sunglasses. Christmas comes, they're not so much. February, forget about it, right? What do you deal with that?
It's not easy. My CFO gets very stressed out every we have to loosen him up. We make 60, 65, 70% of our revenue in 3 to 4 months of sales. And so we are, you know, cash flush June, you know, let's call it March to July, August. And then, you know, in the fall when we're buying inventory for the following year, we're not selling our shades. And so that's something that in the beginning, when we launched and started to see this up down cash cycle, we were like, well, let's figure out how to sell them as a back to school product, and let's figure out how to sell them as a Christmas gift or, you know, Hanukkah present or whatever. And it doesn't work. People don't want to buy sunglasses when they're buying backpacks for their kids and pencil cases, or when they're buying ski gear. We're trying to force something that we've now accepted we can't. And so instead we think about, you know, how are we doubling down when the getting's good is what we've learned. We can't change retail behavior.
So you focus on glasses when they're going to buy sunglasses. Don't pressure them to buy sunglasses when they're not likely to do it. And then it seems like you've expanded into other products like rocket packs, which are your backpacks, right?
Yeah.
Submariners. Yeah. I saw a few other things. Where is it? Gift sets. So how well have those done? How much of your revenue comes from those?
You know, rocket packs is a great example of something where we thought, okay, you know, people come to us, they trust us as a brand that makes durable gear for the outdoor kids. And rocket pack is something that might be a back to school bump. So we're like, maybe this can help us with the revenue cycle where we get a nice little bump in September, August. And, you know, we've learned that, you know, sunglasses are our bread and butter. And I want to say we're still 85-90% eyewear, even though we have the swim goggles and the backpacks. And, you know, we briefly made RX for babies as well. And, you know,
RX meaning prescription glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that it's just, those are sort of examples of let's try, as, you know, in order to really kind of build the business, it's over time, it sustains, it's step by step. It's let's try this. Oh, wait, that's not working. Let's dial it back. All right, let's try that. That is working. Let's do more of that. All right, let's try over here, throw this at the wall. That's not working. Okay. And it's not the moment you notice and you recognize that it's not going to work. You say, all right, you quit, done. Let's close that door and let's go on a new direction, or a direction that we see actually is working. As opposed to getting so attached to some effort or money you put in and going down a rabbit hole that's never gonna work for you.
All right. And the best day so far has been Ellen, right? The number one
revenue generator?
Yeah.
Last week, Khloe Kardashian's daughter wore our Baby Haters True. And that was a really wonderful week for us.
Really?
Why'd she wear it? She wore it on, Khloe put True in our galactic gray with blue mirrored lenses shades, and had a beautiful black turban that John Legend and Chrissy Teigen bought their baby on top of it. And she's a super stylish little girl out at the pool on vacation. And she
this
put her all
Instagram?
Over the Instagram stories. Yeah.
So an Instagram story competitive with Ellen?
Oh, without a doubt.
When we launched
Ellen is a great story. First of all, that was, you know, bringing it back to our PR firm when I was interviewing Sabina. I was like, here's my dream list. And that's actually a great tip for PR. Is every year we circle up at the start of the year and I give her my dream list for the week. And Ellen was on the first one, and she was like, you're not going to get Ellen. I can get you this, I can get you that, but Ellen's going to cost you, you know, crazy amount of money to get on, and you're never going to get it. And she calls us, you know, 3 quarters through the year and was like, you're never going to believe this, Molly, without Ellen. And Ellen brought on Nick Cannon, who was one of our first, you know, Mariah Carey and Nick Cannon were the first sort of celebrities to put Baby Haters in, their shape, their babies and Baby Haters in Us Weekly. And so he came on with talking about the product, and Ellen said, you know, this is great. they're stylish, safe for kids. Everybody should get a pair. We're giving everybody a pair in the audience. Buy the aviators, the cups to commercial, and our site crashes within, 5 seconds. And, we're all calling each other. We're calling, our servers, our server space company, Rackspace. And they're like, no company could prepare for this kind of traffic. You didn't know you were going to be like at the end of commercial with Ellen saying go by. And so we got snippets of sales. But it ended up being more of a longer tail as opposed to an immediate day boost because the site was down three times.
You guys are on Shopify now. Every time down. My sense is Shopify would be able to handle that.
They can. Yeah, we have not had that problem since.
Yeah, it was
but
a Shopify.
We did. We also learned. It was a great learning experience to over prepare for those kind of moments, and also, throughout the, we hope people, maybe they went to Nordstrom instead to buy it, or maybe they went to Amazon to buy it. But over the next couple of weeks, we actually got a lot of boutiques calling too. So we didn't get that one day hype necessarily. Well, we did. It was a great day, but it wasn't necessarily as good as it could have been if they had decided to live the whole time. But we did get that long tail of sales through the re-airing of it and people seeing it later.
I see. I don't want to get too geeky, but it looks like the first version of your site was like custom coded straight up HTML, no CMS.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's why, right. It was just kind of self-hosting it. That makes sense. Wow. All right. I can't believe
it. Like I said, we were bootstrapping that. I mean, it was bare bones.
But you know what? Here's what comes through from the very beginning. I've been going over every time you mention a day in the life of Babyators, I'm going into like the Internet Archive. I'm going back to look at the articles. I'm looking at Reddit from that time.
I love it. Well, check out Chloe and True then. Got to pull that one up.
The what? No, I couldn't. That's the one I couldn't find. I found so many
photos. Google Chloe True, TRUE, Babyators, and you'll get a number of press.
Chloe True, Babyators.
Kardashian.
Let me see. True Thompson photo.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. All right. And look at this. I can't believe, though, that photo would do more than Ellen, that photo would be that big. Oh, I see what
it's
you mean.
It's the Kardashians. The Kardashians.
Wait, this is...
I mean, not necessarily as big as Ellen, but certainly...
This is on True's own personal Instagram account.
On Chloe's personal Instagram.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And also on True's account then. I see. Wowee. Yeah. You know what?
It was a great week.
Kids with sunglasses. It is freaking cute, I gotta say.
Thank you.
Wow. All right. Congratulations on all the success. Anyone who's interested can go check out your website. It's Babyators, spelled Babiators.com. I don't know why sometimes I give people's like spelling and sometimes I don't. It's going to be, if you're listening to me in a podcast app, which you mostly are, slide up on my photo and you're going to see it. If you are not, congratulations on being one of the many new people who are signing up to listen to Mixergy on all the smart speakers that are coming out. All you have to do is say, hey, and then whatever speaker name you have, play Mixergy. It's a really beautiful experience while you're in the kitchen, while you're walking around your house to listen to Mixergy on there. People are buying Echo Dots just to listen to Mixergy.
Cool. Love it.
It is really cool.
Can I buy some shades there too?
Sorry? Buy a pair of shades too while you're listening to me.
Amazon, right. Echo, buy Babyators.
Buy Babyators. Go check them out, babyators.com, and also on Amazon and a bunch of other stores in person. And I want to thank my two sponsors for making this interview happen. The first, if you're looking to raise money for your company, really go to Start Engine and consider raising from them. If it's a good fit for you, you're going to be happy that I introduce you to them. I was one of the first people, by the way, to introduce the world to Shopify. They were one of my early sponsors. I interviewed Toby. I said, why do you need me as a sponsor? He said, you know what? It's not just for your audience. It's I want your audience, because people ask them, what should I do to publish my site, I want the Mixergy audience to say to their friends, go to Shopify. That was his reasoning behind sponsoring Mixergy.
And at the time, awesome.
I was like, what is this Shopify thing? Same thing's happening with Start Engine. People are saying, what is a Start Engine? It's backed by really smart people with a lot of experience in fundraising and building successful companies. And now they're helping anyone who's trying to raise money, raise it using crowdfunding. It's mixergy.startengine.com. They wanted a subdomain, mixergy.startengine.com. And finally, go check out Regis in your city and every other city in the world, pretty much. Regis.mixergy.com. Oh, I freaking love working from them. We got to do another Scotch night here, Molly, Regis lets me do Scotch nights here. That's great. Actually, I ask them stuff like that. Can I bring a treadmill into your office and put it on my desk? I go, it's your office. Why are you asking permission? I say, can I do Scotch night? He goes, it's your office. Why are you asking permission? The only thing the receptionist has asked is, please, Andrew, have your people who don't finish their whiskey pour it down the drain, because the last thing we want to do in the morning on Friday is come in and smell all the whiskey from the glasses that you guys didn't dump out. So I'm willing to do that. But the rest they take care of. All right, Molly, thank you so much and congratulations on the business.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Same here. And bye, everyone.